the buzzer has been cleared on its way. Oh my goodness! Oh!
They have to get it. No timeouts, they do. 40.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage, two fire coaches talking ball, solving the world's problems, and giving you insight to how it really is, not how people think it is. Would you agree with that, D squared?
Oh my God, yes. I mean, look, how people think it is has become a cottage industry. Whining about everything involved in college basketball has made a lot of people a lot of money. That's why we're here to tell you how it actually is, and what two better guys than you and me.
No doubt about it. And obviously the hot topic of conversation, D squared, is this transfer dilemma. And look, it's not going to happen tomorrow, but it is obviously something that's brought into the attention of all of coaches and players and fans. And there are a lot of opinions on it. I'm going to give you a little bit of my feeling about the situation here. I think guys should be able to transfer, be eligible immediately if their coach gets fired, and therefore the player, the coach that they signed to play for is no longer there, because let's face it, players sign with coaches, not schools. The second thing is, I think players should be eligible to transfer and be eligible immediately if a coach takes another job. That's fair. The idea of having players being eligible immediately basically opens up the concept of free agency. Because here's the deal, Dan. If you don't need permission to speak to a prospect when he's considering leaving your institution, what's going to stop anyone and everyone and the circle of influence that's around a prospect from basically shopping that player 24/7, 7 days a week for the next better situation? And what about coaching a guy? Like, how are you going to coach a guy that holds that over your head? I read something yesterday. Said, well, coaches need to talk to their players nicer and spend more time cultivating their players and cultivating their parents. I mean, what do you think coaches do? I mean, they spend all their time doing that. But the reality is, sometimes you got to be like a parent. You got to tell your players something that they don't want to hear, but they need to hear. And that's what parenting is, not telling people what they want to hear, but what's important. And then dealing with a little bit of adversity. And I don't want to hear this stuff about, well, coaches can leave anytime. Yeah, well, you know, coaches can leave anytime and they can pay significant buyouts, number one. Number two is coaches can leave anytime, but look, I've been offered jobs and turned them down. You can't just be a free agent as a player because everything is not in place. There are times that you can transfer. I understand that. There are good reasons to transfer. And there are benefits of transferring. Working on your body, working on your academics, getting ahead. That year actually is a good transition year to improve yourself. But the idea that you don't need permission, the idea that there could potentially be free agency in college basketball, I wouldn't want to coach mid-majors. I wouldn't want to coach high majors. I wouldn't want to coach football. The football guys are going to get hit as bad as the basketball guys.
You know, I agree. But the converse to that, I didn't know this. I didn't know that in my wife's sport, softball, you could transfer. And it really hasn't been an epidemic. Basketball is different, though. Basketball is you know, big popularity, big money. A lot of things go into it. Look, I'm with you on the whole, hey, look, if coach leaves, transfer. You know, coach gets fired, transfer. I'm with all of that. My thing with this is simply this. I've never been, and there's a difference between having a discussion, a legitimate discussion with people that are involved, and saying clever and cute things to win an argument. I mean, I've seen all the clever and cute things. I'm just going to simply tell you this. If you coach at a mid-major and a player's having a hell of a year and Kentucky comes a-calling in the middle of the year and wants you to transfer, I don't give a damn how much relationship you have. I don't give a damn how much you've cultivated parents. I don't care. That kid's going to Kentucky. Happened to me, Ron Lewis. I had a top 25 team. He was there all summer. Moved him into an apartment. He had a great time. But guess what? He went home, Columbus, Ohio. Ohio State's in Columbus. Next thing you know, August 9th, he's transferring to Ohio State. And he called me. He said, Coach, it's nothing to do with you. It's that, you know what? I got a chance to play at Ohio State. So, you know, I don't want to hear that. When I hear that, well, happy kids don't leave, that's crap. Happy kids may not leave Duke. Happy kids may not leave North Carolina. Happy kids may not leave Kentucky. And I guess what we have to figure out is, as an NCAA or as a basketball group, what are we trying to achieve? Like, are we trying to make this a Power Five only thing? I mean, look, a kid's playing at Southwest Missouri State, having a hell of a year. All of a sudden, Missouri calls. I don't give a damn when it is. I don't care how much cultivating you've done. Yeah, and so, you know, again, it's a difference between, again, those things are said to win an argument. You know, those things are said to educate people that really don't know, that are just going to jump on it. It's a cottage industry. Look, bitching about the NCAA, two things are cottage industries in college sports. One is compliance. Compliance is a cottage industry. You got a rule book, read a damn rule book. Should be one person doing compliance or maybe two, whatever. The other thing is this, you know, complaining about the NCAA. The one thing that I would say is I'm glad they're looking into it.
It's a good conversation.
Yeah, it's a good conversation, Seth. But to me, there's a difference between winning a cute argument. So Joey Bag of Donuts, you know, in Greensburg, Indiana, agrees with you and goes on Twitter and says that everything's bad. It's a totally different thing being involved in it. And I don't particularly listen to people that haven't been head coaches, because there's a big difference between being a head coach and being a guy that talks about head coaches.
You know, the interesting thing to me is scholarships are for 4 years now, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, in essence, they're four-year contracts, if you want to say it's a contract. Now, look, your son played as a walk-on at Michigan before he got a scholarship. My daughter played volleyball at Villanova. All right? You know, when everyone talks about the whole idea of paying players and that they're being abused and you know, student-athlete welfare and they're being exploited, all right? I paid $71,000 a year for my daughter to go to Villanova. That's about 100 and what? 5,000 after taxes?
Yeah.
I would think it's somewhere in there.
Yeah.
If she was a basketball player, she'd be getting four tickets to games. All right. She'd be getting, obviously she got all the gear and all that jazz. Now me as an adult, you as an adult when you coached, you know, you had a little bit of a contract with whatever shoe company and you got taxed on what you got. And you know, your season ticket, like when I was at Virginia Tech, I got 10 season tickets. You know what? I was taxed on those season tickets. All right. So now, you know, we're talking about these players. These scholarships are worth a significant amount of money. I talked to Jim Boeheim the other day. Their players are getting $1,400 a month, their housing and their meals on top of that, and then their cost of attendance. And their cost of attendance is a little bit low. So what I'm saying is, if you want to say, well, you know, these guys are athletes, and are they going to pay taxes on – are they going to pay for their tuition? Are they going to pay taxes on their tickets? Are they taxes on their gear? Because very few guys move the needle. I mean, like I watched a football game this past weekend, Georgia Tech, Tennessee. Now, you're a football fan. Name me one player on those two teams.
Seth.
Name me one player.
I said on Twitter, name me one player. Not one player on either one of those teams. Not one. Now maybe, because the quarterback at Georgia Tech, I can't remember his name, was pretty good.
Had a good game. The kid Marshall had a good game.
Yeah. All right. But, Seth, not one player involved in that game had anything to do with selling one ticket. Not any player involved in that game had anything to do with the TV rights. Not one. Not one. And I'll be honest with you, Calvin Johnson, great wide receiver, went to Georgia Tech. You know, people talk about, well, the players before set that up. No, he didn't. No, there are 20 people alive north of the Mason-Dixon line that know that Calvin Johnson went to Georgia Tech. So, you know,
people are fans of Tennessee. That's their school. Right. That's their passion. The same people that are going to games at Virginia Tech now went there when Del Curry played, probably.
Yeah, and people say to me, hey, look, what if you brought an intramural team? You know, switch them. Put an intramural team out there. And my answer to that is, well, they did at Indiana in 09. Indiana basketball in 09 had walk-ons. Indiana, you know, Tom, I gutted a couple guys. They hired Tom Crean. Crean gutted the rest. And, you know, they were playing with walk-ons. Guess what? Sold the place out. Guess what? TV deals, TV money still came in. So, look, I get that there are certain guys. I do. I get that there are certain guys that move the needle. But Seth, going back to the transfer thing, those guys at the mid-major that move the needle will not be at a mid-major I'm talking about halfway through the season. And we've all had guys. And again, this isn't a coach's thing. Like, people always say, well, you protect coaches. No, I don't protect coaches. I don't care about coaches. Truthfully, I'm not one of those that says everything's about student athlete welfare. I understand this is about the university. I understand this is about opportunities for student athletes. So I'm not one of those that says, well, you know, if you're really about the student athlete. Well, truth of the matter is, I'm for the entire game. And to me, if you're going to let kids leave Bowling Green in the middle of the year or at the end of the year and just walk away without anybody knowing or anybody caring, is bad for the sport. Is it going to be the Wild West? Probably not. But is it going to be good for the sport to do that? I think that remains to be seen. I just don't see. Like, it might be good for Duke, and it might be good for an individual. All right, let's talk about student athlete. One second. All right, how about this? You and I are on a team with Josh. We got a team, and we're going pretty good, okay? And you're averaging 30. All of a sudden, you transfer middle of the year to Duke. All right? That's good for you, right? That's bad for me as your teammate. That's bad for 13, 14 other guys on that team. So to me, don't tell me about student athlete welfare. Tell me about student athlete's welfare. Guy leaving in the middle of the whole deal isn't good for the group. It may be good for that guy. It may not be good for that guy. So, again, there's a difference between winning an argument and appeasing the masses and what's real and what's actual.
You know, here's my thing on that, and maybe, you know, we say it's not going to be an epidemic. And like, epidemic, it's hard to define. But, like, if you look at the fifth-year transfer rule right now, all right? And, you know, I'm actually not opposed to the fifth-year transfer rule because the whole idea of college is to graduate. I think it leaves people in a bad place, but it is what it is. But here's the deal. Those guys, all right, the numbers of players that are fifth-year guys has gone up every single year. And the manner in which they've been recruited is obviously people are recruiting guys right off guys' rosters if they even think they have a chance to graduate early to fill a roster spot. So if it's happening in the fifth-year graduate transfer area, imagine if it's happening in freshman, sophomore, and junior, and normal rising senior area. So you're multiplying that, my gut feeling, and maybe I'm not right, you're multiplying that by four. So if we've got 800 transfers right now, all right, are we going to have 3,200? And is it going to be reciprocal? And, you know, again, I understand, you know, if I'm a low major guy and I have a great season, I want to play up, and that's a once-in-a-lifetime thing, and this could be the greatest thing in the world. That's great. And, you know, people can say, well, that's fine. He should be able to do that. Then forget about four-year scholarships. Because then all of a sudden, if a guy's not producing, you know, a guy should be able to say, you know, he's not good enough. He's out. I don't even have to worry about finding a way to pay for a scholarship. Because, like, people think that coaches run players off. Let me tell you something. You'll walk up to a guy and say, you know what? Right now, as I see it, I don't expect you to play a great deal. If you want to transfer, we'll help you. If not, you're more than welcome to stay here. That's the conversation that happens. Guys aren't getting run off because you don't use 13 scholarships anyway. So, like, you know, to me, you know, I get tired of the thing. Well, everyone wants four-year scholarships. But, you can transfer. The four-year scholarship doesn't mean anything. You can transfer right away and be eligible next year. So what's the sense of four-year scholarship? Does that make any sense?
No, I think it. I do think it makes sense. Again, my thing isn't. I think so often people hide when they make arguments. Well, the NCAA says it's about the student athlete. Well, it is, and in theory, Seth, the student athlete transferring and sitting out a year makes sense in theory because you're acclimating to another school, you're acclimating to another team. You got a year to work on your body. You know, I've always thought a redshirt year was really
great chance to graduate on time.
That's what I'm saying. So in theory, it makes sense. So now if we want to speed this along so a few guys can play, I think it's something that you look at. I think without question, there's going to be more transfers. Because let's be realistic. I know there are more mid-majors on TV. But I remember when the MAC signed this big ESPN deal. And everybody in the league was excited. I happened to look at it. And I went to the conference meetings, and I just ripped into everybody. I said, this is crazy. This, you know, because they were telling us how great it was for basketball. There was like 100 games for football and like 15 for basketball. I said, you clowns, what's wrong? Like telling the coaches, you guys are all great with this. Are you crazy? No, this is actually a worse deal than what we had with Fox for basketball, not for football, but for basketball. So now, though, college basketball has become such a big production in terms of the difference now between major and mid-major on TV. Now, I'm not talking about Wichita State. I'm not talking about teams that have busted through. I'm talking about teams, the normal everyday MAC team, the normal everyday Missouri Valley team, the Horizon League, has become such a difference. And if that's what we want, then cool, because that's what you're going to get. I mean, because I'm just telling you, look what happened to Gary Waters, coach at Gary Waters, I coached against him. We both had really good teams going back in the late 90s. And Gary Waters is a hell of a coach. Rutgers made a hell of a mistake. Gary Waters gets all these players, and next thing you know, boom, they leave. They go to Michigan State. They go to all these other places. And away you go. So, and then the other thing is, can I just say
it's going to get worse now with the 20-game league schedules. Because you know what? 20-game league schedules – few of those schools are going to have an opportunity to play up and play games unless they get an exempt events. And it is going to be even harder to maintain any semblance of success at an age.
Let me ask you something. Let me ask you something. You're coaching Long Beach. And you have a couple pros there. All of a sudden, I don't know, maybe 1st of September, you look in the stands and you see somebody that you know has UCLA ties. And maybe not the coaching staff sitting there, Scott. Now, all of a sudden, you know, if there's no rules, and I don't know, all of a sudden, mid-December, Alford or somebody shows up on your campus talking to the kid in the dormitory because there's no rules, right? Isn't that what people want? I mean, what are you, you know, again, I'm for the institution. You spent the institution's money recruiting this kid. You've laid out this thing. How are you feeling about that? How's the president of the university feeling about that?
I can tell you one thing. I mean, I had pros, and Lucius Harris and Brian Russell, and you know, I had guys that were under-recruited at Virginia Tech. Those guys would never ended up staying at Virginia
never.
Tech.
Never.
Xavier Nadell's going into the Virginia Tech Hall of Fame. Hall of Fame. First player I recruited at Virginia Tech. If these rules are the way they are now, I can tell you by the time he was a junior – he would be gone, and he would have been a good player wherever he went to school, but he wouldn't have had the experience of being a Hall of Famer. He wouldn't have had the experience of going into Duke and going into Carolina as a senior, winning those games. He wouldn't have had to learn the value of dealing with adversity, which has probably made him be able to handle some of the injuries he's had in his professional career, playing overseas, doing all those things. Because, you know, it's sometimes adversity is good for you. It's good for you. It helps you grow.
You know what the answer to that is?
And we're losing that.
You know what the answer to that is? Please, don't give me that. If I was going to criticize Jay Billis, I'd criticize Jay Billis, okay? I mean, I got no problem with that. But I'm not – and I want this – you know, I'm not talking about – I'm talking about a lot of people that have hit me. Like, I had a conversation – yesterday on my radio show with Tim Abramidis' brother, who played at Yale, about this exact same thing, and he was saying the exact same thing. Oh, that's silly. Well, it's really not to people that have been coaches. I mean, it may be to somebody that you know, writes for something, but to guys that have been coaches and guys that have been inside with these players, you see it. And like, I can't tell you. I lead the world. I swear to God, if everybody said, well, you know, what do you lead the world in? I lead the world in notes from players after they transferred saying what a mistake it was. They wish they'd never done it. I got one kid, went, played, transferred. Dad called me, who wanted him to transfer from me because he drove to a game and didn't get to play enough. And the one game the guy could come to, he didn't know his kid was hurt. Will you take him back? He was at UIC with, Collins. He's like, hey, this stinks. Would you take him back? I'm like, I can't take him back. He played for me, transferred to another school. So, you know, again, I get it. I get that this industry has formed to where people make money People make speeches. There's some dude named Rudy. I mean, there's all these professors that give speeches on this stuff that have never stepped foot inside of a locker room. Never. The difference between being in the media, and you and I have been both, the difference in being in the media or and being a head coach is, I mean, it's not even, it's like going to the doctor, but not really being a doctor. You know what I mean? So
here's my thing. I respect other people's opinion. Like, I'm all for, look, if someone disagrees with me, I have all the respect in the world because, I mean, that's what our country's made of. I mean, you have a freedom of voice. But I think everyone needs to respect the other person's voice.
Seth, I respect people's opinion, but I listen to them.
Exactly. There's a difference between respecting it and listening and agreeing. And that's my biggest thing with people that have not really lived it. Now let's get off of that subject.
Let me just end with this. And that goes for any business. Like when I want to know about like a fire pit, I got a guy working on a fire pit right now. I ask him about it. You know, I don't know about it. It's in any business. If you're inside the business, you know. If you're outside trying to figure it out, you don't. It's just the way it simply is. And man, but I've heard so much about this in the last few days from so many. Can we address one other thing in terms of this real quick?
Sure. You can address whatever you want. It's our show.
All right. Here's what drives me nuts. If the NCAA is such a bad deal, and I've told my son, look, son, you know, you're at Ohio State, last year's at Michigan, you're never going to live this well again until you're 50. Just understand this. You're never, I don't give a damn. Unless you win the lottery. You win the lottery, then you'll live this well. All right. I get so tired because the only answer is it shouldn't be this way. That's the only answer to this question, Seth. My thing is then don't play NCAA basketball. Then, you know, well, there's no other options. Well, of course there's options. There's the G League or whatever the hell that thing's called. There's all kinds of things, all right? But the only answer to that is it shouldn't be this way. Well, of course it should be this way. There's not 87,000 media companies in downtown Indianapolis. I mean, there's not 72,000 places where you can just go do whatever you want. Of course it should be that way. And you know why? Do you know why people want to play NCAA basketball and not go overseas? Do you know why they want to play NCAA basketball, not go to the D-League, or not spend a year at IMG working on their game? Because it's such a damn good deal. That's why. Because it's the greatest deal going for an 18-year-old to be on a full scholarship at a major university. So the only answer to it is, well, it shouldn't be that way. Well, damn right it should be that way. Anyway, that's my rant for the day.
I'll take it to the next level. The same players, have you ever watched a D-League game or now G League game on NBA yes. TV? All right. So you're one of the few because they basically don't even rate.
Yes, but right? I haven't. I know where you're going with this.
And in the stands, all right, there's basically, basically empty seats. There might be 500
not,
people.
Not
there might be 1,000 people.
Seats. There are empty seats.
All right. So, like, here's what I'm saying is those same players, if you're watching these games, and I talked to Frank Martin about this today, the guys that are playing those games are the same guys that everyone that we all know that have played at all these schools that we talk about all the time. But yet the schools that we talk about all the time, those places are packed, but yet the same players are playing. Why? Because people go to games and people watch games on TV because of the affiliation that they have, all right, with the institution and not actually the affiliation they have with any one particular player except for every once in a while, there's a player that moves the needle for that institution. Would you agree or disagree?
I'll take it a little bit farther there. I had a friend of mine who was going up to Fort Wayne to watch the Mad Ants play, D-League team. Tyler Hansbrough was up there last year. I said, hey, man, send me a picture if you see a Tyler Hansbrough jersey. You know, Tyler Hansbrough should get paid because it's his jersey sells at Carolina, really? All right. Does it sell because he's at Carolina? Or does it sell because he's Tyler Hansbrough? You know how many jerseys were at the Mad Ants game in Fort Wayne that had Tyler Hansbrough jerseys? None. You know how many for sale? None. So, again, there's a balance. Now, all right, players should be paid, all right? Well, okay, I asked the guy this yesterday, smart kid from Yale, called my show, wanted to talk about it. I said, okay, what's the balance? All right, let's just say for the sake of argument, Tyler Hansbrough does move the needle when he was at Carolina. All right, what's the balance? How much does the brand get, meaning North Carolina, and how much is Hansbrough worth? Tell me the balance. Because there is, you know, Hasbro would probably, you know, he sold some jerseys, but he sold it because he was at Michigan. Fab Five goes to Bowling Green. I don't give a damn what they think. They're not walking around complaining that their jerseys aren't selling. They're at Michigan. What's the balance?
Well, here's the thing. If you just took a jersey, a blue jersey, put nothing on the front of it, and put Hansborough's name on the back of it, how many would sell?
As many as I saw, or as many as my friends saw at Fort Wayne. Now, so again,
Carolina on the front of it, and what happens?
And no Hansborough on the back, you're selling the hell out of North Carolina jersey. You just are. Hey, you could put a North Carolina jersey on what the ceiling is the roof, and it's selling.
All right. I thought we were going to get into the SEC, which I think is going to be an unbelievable conference this year. I mean, like, really deep and really good and good coaches and great depth. But I'm not sure we have enough time, so we're going to push that off. It's tying in with this thing, because Josh tells me we're on a little bit of a clock. Tying with this thing. 20-game league season. Now, you play in a challenge game, which is your ACC Big Ten. That's 21. You play in an exempt event. That's 25. All right. Now you're stuck with maybe you play one other TV game that you hopefully you get. That's 26. You got four games to play with. How much will that impact mid-major budgets? How much will that impact mid-majors having a chance to play up and get those marquee wins that could maybe get them in the NCAA tournament? Will Power Five conferences and obviously the Big East and maybe the American Conference and a couple – will they go into 20 conference games hurt the chances for mid-majors to get at-large bids? That's the question.
Well, I don't. I think you and I would both agree it certainly does. I mean,
definitely, without a doubt, right?
Yeah. I mean, it just that's easy because let's be honest. When you look at the opportunities for mid-majors, some of them get to play in pretty good tournaments, so you get a little opportunity there. But that's it. That's shut down. I'll say this, though. When I was at Bowling Green, I wasn't mad about going to two extra conference games because it got me one home game. Like, I rarely, if ever, had three home games in a non-conference season. Rarely. So if it got me another home game, I wasn't mad about it. But, no, it there's no question about it, Seth. None.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's going to be an interesting thing to watch moving forward because it seems like everyone's going to 20 and – you know, just getting on before we go to the student section, Josh, because we're going to get to the student section. As I've been studying the SEC, they're going to get seven or eight teams in the NCAA tournament. I mean, like Auburn's good. Missouri's good. Ole Miss has got three impact transfers. Alabama, you know, with Colin Sexton and Petty to go with the guys they have coming back. I mean, we know about Kentucky. We know about, Florida. I mean, Arkansas has got those two guys, the two junior college guys back that are seniors. Don't count out Andy Kennedy. I mean, South Carolina is going to play hard. Tennessee's got this kid from France that everyone I speak to says is an absolute pro with James Daniels, the kid from Howard. I'm telling you, the game, and I didn't even mention Texas A&M, who might have the best starting five in the SEC. Every game in the SEC, and they're going to just have, it's going to be unbelievable. It's that league is going to be fun to watch.
Seth, I'm going through some things, again, like you getting ready for college basketball. I'm just looking at mock drafts, and two things stuck out, and we can talk about one of these other time, but one of them is the amount of freshmen that are going to be picked in the first round, in the
I'm
top
crazy.
Of the first round. But Robert Williams and the kid Sexton from Alabama, we always talk about, hey, look, it's Kentucky in the draft. One of them's got Robert Williams going fifth. And the other one's got the Sexton kid going eighth. I mean, you're talking about pros in this league, and that's on top of the Kentucky kids. That's on top of Michael Porter. Hell, that's on top of Michael Porter's 6'11" brother who came in. And that's Missouri, a team that was at the bottom. So, you had sent me, hey, we're going to talk about this today. So I started looking up, all right, let me see what I know about the SEC. My God, does anybody realize that last year Arkansas won 26 games? Like, people don't even think about Arkansas. They won 26 games, got beat by Carolina in the tournament. I mean,
in a controversial game.
Yes, with Carolina, absolutely. Yeah, so, you know what? I don't think – let me ask you this. Has Ben Holland done what people expected Ben Holland to do? I know Malik Newman left, but has that been a disappointment?
It's been a disappointment, but I think that, there's a process when you're at Mississippi State compared to, say, the process you would go through at UCLA and – even Pitt. But this coming year, he's got Nick Weatherspoon. He's got Quindre Weatherspoon, who had a very nice sophomore season. I mean, they got Lamar Peters, who I saw at the Adidas Nations camp, who's a potential pro. They got hit a little bit because they had another transfer this year, that Mario Kegler, that front court player that hurt him. But they're a potential. Here's the deal. They're good. I mean, they're good. I mean, you're talking about Ole Miss has three transfers, and their backcourt, Terrence Davis averaged 14 points a game. Markel Crawford, a transfer from Memphis, is a big-time three-point shooter. All right, and DeAndre Burnett averaged 16 points a game. He's got a legitimate backcourt. Vanderbilt, very good. Three seniors that have played a ton of games, and Matthew Fisher, Davis, Roberson, and LaChance. I mean, that team is good. Mayton is a tough matchup. This league is deep.
Yeah, this league is a mother. Keybon Allen, right? 35 against Wisconsin. Ooh. In that hell of a game. And Chiesa hits the game winner. All right. Keybon Allen, when I see a guy that averages 14 points a game and he leads a team in scoring, okay, and then he ends the season like that, my first thought is, wait a second. You're looking at, if you're going to talk about All-Americans that may not be on an All-American list in the preseason, watch that kid. When you finish a season like that, Seth, and all of a sudden, and it's not like a fluke. You know, it's just getting better, more confident. Whoa. So look, I'm telling you, he may not be on All-American list to start the year, but he's going to be.
And they got two kids sitting out, Jalen Hudson, Virginia Tech transfer, who can really shoot it, and then the kid from Rice, who averaged 18 points and 9 rebounds. I mean, the league is just – I'll tell you one thing. That's going to be a – whoever ends up coaching calling most of those games, you're going to see really good basketball, good coaches, and really good teams. I'm telling you, they're going to have 7 or 8 teams. All this stuff about the SEC is not a basketball conference. Oh. When you have resources and you have commitment, you're going to have success. And right now – they've invested, all right, and they have resources, and you're going to see the SEC take a huge step forward.
All right, let me play devil's advocate with you. You ready?
All right.
You mentioned a lot of transfers coming into the SEC. Is that a good thing for sports? Is that a good thing for college basketball? That, you know, this kid from here, that kid from there, this kid averaged 19 at Rice. So, you know, we talk about them. Major, is it better, you know, for college basketball that a good player plays at the SEC or plays at Rice?
Well, yeah, I think the thing is, you talk about the stage. I mean, Rice is, you know, obviously not going to play in the same stage, get the same exposure. I mean, it's obviously two different worlds. I mean, that's why. But the kids transfer. But those guys, you know, what the thing is, these guys sat out. They learned the system. They got involved in their on their team. They developed the chemistry, and you know what? It probably helped them academically. If they were eligible right away. What's their transition like? Like, here's my thing. There's always a transition. So, like, sitting out a year in a lot of ways really makes that transition that much easier. Let me ask you this. How many fifth-year guys that went to schools really have had an impact?
How many fifth-year transfers?
As role players, fifth-year transfers, except as a role player.
Not really. Not near what I think that people think they're going to do when they transfer in as a fifth. You know, you transfer in. As a fifth-year guy, you think you're going to light it up? Nah, they don't. No. I mean, they help. So they help a little bit, but no, not really.
They're fit guys. They're fit guys. Yeah. So, I mean, that goes back to the other thing. But you know what we got to do right now, though, Dan?
Tell me.
We got to speak to your people. Your people.
People.
We got to go, Joshy, to the student section. And we will do that in a moment.
And here they come, folks. Here they come.
It's time for you to storm the podcast. Let's hear from the student section.
All right, guys. We actually have a relatively full student section today. We have this question from Eric Aldridge, who is at ealdridge1389. And Eric
says... He's a regular.
He is a regular. Oh, yeah, yeah. We have... All these students have season tickets. They got the little student package. but, yeah, there are a lot of folks sitting there. Like Eric, who says, with the Power 5 conferences going to 20-game league seasons, will this cut into the mid and low major automatic bids for the NCAAs?
We actually talked about this earlier in the podcast. There's no doubt about it. There's just not going to be opportunities for those guys to get wins against the field. And there's no doubt in my mind that that will impact at-large bids for mid-major conferences.
Yes, sir. I agree with Seth. Ditto.
On a related note, we also got this question from Curtis Colby. Curtis says, how can mid-majors get quality home games instead of playing a lot of road bye games to boost their resumes?
Play Division III teams. That's about it. I mean, look, let's be honest. A lot of these teams at the high major, we joke about Duke all the time. They're not going anywhere to play, and that's not going to change. It just simply is not going to change. I mean, you can talk about it. The only way it changes is if there's some legislation that changes it. But in my opinion, Seth, like I said earlier, I was lucky to get 3 non-conference home games. 4 was a magical year, and that's simply it, period.
I would say their best chance is to play the other high major mid-majors. And what I mean by that is every mid-major league has a team that's eventually at some point is been dominant. And if I was a mid-major and I wanted to try to get quality home games, basically create your own bracket buster. Middle Tennessee's done that with their schedule a little bit. It's the only way you get at least a game that resonates a little bit.
Yeah, let's be honest. Bowling Green, and I'm using them because it's my experience, Bowling Green gets bought. Like, we got bought by Indiana State. You know what I mean? We got bought.
Yeah.
You know, Wichita State's going to pay as much as anybody else, and they're the, you know, high major.
Ooh, yeah.
So I just think it's hard. I just think it's really gotten difficult for teams that aren't fully committed to saying, all right, here is the scale. We're going to up everything in our program and take a swing at whatever we got to take a swing at, whether it's going to Maui, because there's all these tournaments. I think your best bet is neutral site games. Home court is really, yep, really difficult.
Couple neutral more here,
site
fellas.
Exempt events.
Couple,
yeah, exempt, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Couple more here, fellas. This one from Drew Allen, another loyal member of the student section. He's at the Drew Abides, and he says, which upperclassman this season will be the most important to their team's success?
I'm going to give you one out of the Big Ten, Ethan Happ, excuse me. Ethan Happ is the guy that everybody forgets about, you know. But Wisconsin, if Wisconsin's going to make a move, all the names you recognize are gone. And I was just thinking about this today. Ethan Happ has to have a continuance, which if he continues on the path he's on, he's going to be a first-team All-American, and he has to be for Wisconsin to be Wisconsin.
Don't confuse your Cubbies and your Badgers, Dan.
No, what did I say?
You said Ian Happ, who plays for the Cubs.
Oh, yeah, Ian Happ, the rookie of the year. That's yes, right. You're right.
All right, I'm going to throw a couple at you real quick. Bonzi Colson could be ACC player of the year, but you know what? I mean, they've lost some big-time scores. Bonzi Colson's got to be big. Staying in the ACC, Joel Berry, he's got to be big because, look, their front court has been decimated. They're going to be more perimeter-oriented, which I think is huge. Go to your Big Ten, my man Isaac Haas, the mountain masquerading as a man. I mean, I think him staying out of foul trouble, I think you'd agree with that, Dan. If he can stay out of foul trouble, I think that'll be used. West Coast, Thomas Welch. Hey, you know what? UCLA, they're going to have to survive without Lonzo Ball, and college basketball might even survive without LaMelo Ball. Shocking, but I think college basketball will still be in existence if LaMelo Ball doesn't play college basketball. I think the games will still be on ESPN. I think they'll still get rating, and wherever he might have gone, people will still go to those games. So I think, you know, basketball will survive. But next year, I think Thomas Welch at UCLA, I think it's really important for him to have, you know, for him to be good. Because every time that guy shoots it, you think it's going in. And that's always a good thing. When the guy shoots it, you think it's going in. And then I'd say probably, you know, the last one and probably the most controversial, I think Grayson Allen needs to have a seamless season without any type of drama. And because the less drama with the talent that Duke has, if they can just go and play, that could be really interesting. Last one, Keelan Martin in your town. Don't you think with the transition to the new coaching staff, even obviously though Coach Jordan understands what the Butler way is all about, Martin's got to be consistent?
Oh, God, yeah. And I'll give you another one here in town here. Colin Hartman's coming back to Indiana is massive. I mean, he wasn't going to come back. Coaching change, and now he wants to come back. So that is huge for Indiana. But Keelan Martin has a chance again. I, by the time we're done with this podcast, I'm going to give you 72 All-Americans. But Keelan Martin has a chance. If Butler's going to be good, Keelan Martin has to be a guy that you go, damn, end of the year. Wow, nobody better than him. Absolutely no question about that one.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And the last one is Mikal Bridges at Villanova.
Yeah, Villanova. Drew asked for one upperclassmen.
And We're trying to educate Drew.
That's what I try. Hey,
we have literally named every upperclassman in college basketball.
Well, this is what we do. We give people stuff that other people don't give them.
I'll give you an upperclassman because he's a senior, even though he's a sophomore. Miles Bridges is going to be the player of the year. I'm just telling you. I was talking to Dane Fife the other day, and well, I was texting with him. And Dave's like, you know what? Dane's like, you know what? If we play as well as we should, then he'll be player of the year. He's I look at all these people that are talking about this guy, that guy. Best athlete in the country is Miles Bridges. He's only a sophomore, but hell, he's done. He's gone. So he's an upperclassman.
But he came back, which is an amazing thing. And he actually came back because he likes his teammates. And he knew that he wanted to have a chance to get a little bit better so he can go and actually have an NBA career, not have it sign a contract, which is always a good thing.
Are there any other seniors out there that we've failed?
Now you're being a little, you're being a little bit sarcastic right now.
Are we including seniors? Because I don't want my son listening.
Andrew Dockage,
you didn't mention me. Yeah. The obligatory Andrew Dockage mention had to come through. He's called me twice, by the way, during this podcast. I'm a little nervous. That could only mean one thing: speeding ticket.
He needs money.
Yes, I tell you what, hey.
Andrew Dockage got mentioned, and Jake the Wonder Dog hasn't barked the whole podcast. We're in good shape.
Wow. Well, you can call your son back, Dan, in a couple minutes, but we have one more student section question from who, Seth?
Oh, ID Kelly won, of course.
ID Kelly won. It wouldn't be a student section without him. And ID Kelly, on a sad and somewhat serious note, says that he's sorry to hear about the passing of Coach Massimino, as we all are. Where would you guys rank him on the all-time list of NCAA coaches?
That's it. We also lost Judd Heathcote.
You mentioned that last podcast, of course.
Yeah.
I think there are certain guys that, for whatever the reason, there's always an upper echelon. Krzyzewski, it looks like Bill Self's going into Hall of Fame, that kind of thing. But then there are guys that are just great coaches. And for me personally, I look at what they did at what school. Like, Villanova's a small Catholic school. I mean, look, they had Howard Porter back in the day, made a run to the NCAA Final Four. But what Roy Massimino did there and what Judd Heathcote did at Michigan State, fantastic. I would put Roy Massimino as good a coach as any, who did as good a job as anybody has ever done at the school and the resources and what he was given. So I had a chance to get to know him a little bit when he was in Cleveland. I was in Bowling Green, and I got to tell you, nobody was more fun. Nobody was more energetic. I never seen a guy, Seth, he loved doors. Like Rex Ryan has a foot fetish. I did not know this. Roy Massimino loved doors. And he built this practice facility at Cleveland State, and he's taking me through. And all he's talking about is the doors. Look at this door. Look how thick this wood is. Try to hit that door. He loved freaking doors, which I think is so cool that, just something different about a guy that I think everybody loved.
I mean, think about it. He won a national championship recruiting to Nevin Gymnasium, which is where volleyball plays now at Villanova. He created the culture of, if there's a Butler way, there's surely the Nova way of doing things, what they call Wildcat for Life, which he created. And obviously Jay is his lift through. But more importantly, here's the thing about Roley. And Roley Massimino, it sickens me he's not in the Hall of Fame. It absolutely sickens me that he's not in the Hall of Fame. Roley Massimino, Lefty Drizel, put these guys in the Hall of Fame and put Lefty in while he's living. To me, that is really important. But Roley Massimino is a coach's coach. He coached high school. He coached at Stony Brook. He was an assistant at Penn. I mean, to the week before he passed away, he was coaching Kaiser College or University in outside of Jupiter. And his assistant coach, a guy named Ken Gableman, who actually played high school where I played high school. And he was as passionate about coaching those kids as he was about his Final Four team. I mean, he wasn't coaching because of bright lights. He was coaching because he was a coach. And to me, for someone who now has been out of it for 5 years, he's doing it. He did it because he loved it. And to me, that puts him way up top on the list of guys because he didn't do it for any other reason to make difference in people's lives, which is what we all got into it for when we first got into it.
Well said, Coach. Absolutely. Thank you for those questions. Keep them coming using the hashtag student section. And also, if you have not already done so, subscribe to our podcast in the listen tab of the ESPN app or on Apple Podcasts.
Joshy, great job. Dan, good to have you connected. And Jake, thank you for being quiet during the course of the podcast.
Jake the Wonder Dog was the MVP.
And Andrew Dockage, we'll hit you back in a couple of minutes.
I'll send you the text on how much that phone call is going to cost me.
You got it, brother.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the NBA Lockdown Podcast, available in the ESPN app. Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage.